Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Now's my shit together, is my shit together.
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Get Ricky on the board. We have Professor Carl. S&P futures down 10, NASDAQ futures down 300. Guess what I'm busily doing here?
I don't know. What are you busily doing?
I'm trying to figure out how much rain we got here yesterday. Unbelievable. Oh. It was like 4 inches in like an hour or two.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a small amount.
I sit by my window here downtown in my office and all my machines. And I look out at the post office and the expressway, and we've seen some, you know, 20 some years we've been here, some pretty nasty storms. It was the middle of the night, not just dark. And This thing came through and it was whacking against the windows so damn hard. And at one point, I think we got 3.5 inches downtown in like 2 hours. And it came from the northwest instead of the southwest, which is somewhat unusual. And then later on, about 5:30, another one came from the southwest, almost not as, maybe not quite as intense. And Audrey had no power. The whole area had no power. The people next door, two birch trees on the ground. I don't know if they still have any power. But the amount of trees and stuff that are down, it's like the wind came from a different direction and totally surprised all these trees that have been there for like 25 years. I don't know what.
There you go. It happens, right?
She has a guy who did some fence work for her, and one of the trees that went down a few weeks ago landed on part of her fence. So the guy who put the fence up had to come out, and he's been in the business 20 some years. And they had that intense storm in that whole area. It's probably 4 or 5 weeks ago. The guy got 1,000 calls the next day to come fix fences. The trees landed on him.
Well, you know, when I moved down to Florida, literally the day before, there was a derecho sort of thing that came through.
What exactly is that?
Well, it's a extremely severe, long track, straight line wind storm.
That's what we've been getting here. Every one of these things has been like a 70 mile an hour blast that comes with it.
Right. It looks, the damage frequently looks like it was a tornado, okay? But it isn't, and the way you can tell the difference, besides the fact that there's no funnel cloud, is that there's the rotational damage that you get from a tornado is not there, okay? It's obviously a straight line kind of thing. But yeah, it was literally the day before, along with large hail. I was going to get my boat for the last time out of the dry stack up at Fox Lake, and the guys are like, "You're actually coming up here?" I said, "Well, yeah, I kind of sort of have to. I have to leave at 6:30 in the morning. leave, because I'm moving." And they said, "Well, if you can get here, we'll load it in the dry stack building. We're sure as hell not going to launch it." And so that's exactly what I ended up doing, but I wound up hiding under an overpass at one point while going out there because the hail was intense enough that I was reasonably sure that my car was going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was one of those deals.
Well, yeah,
it was really nasty, Chief, but I mean, those kinds of storms do come.
Yeah, we were, this is kind of an interesting family story. My brother was doing some seminars out in, we used to, because Illinois actually has Kazimierz Pulaski Day, is a holiday like no other state does because there's so many Polish people there.
Yeah.
That would be our weekend that we would sneak out and go skiing. because right. the kids were off school. But if you went to Washington's birthday, it was a zoo because everybody was off, right? But because everybody wants a three-day weekend to go skiing, right? So we were going to drive out to Steamboat, and one of my nephews, he was, I think he was 16, or he was able to drive. The other guy wasn't. He was like 12.
Right.
So of course, we're heading out. We're going to head out early, and, we don't head out early because of the kids, right?
Right.
So we're in my truck, and it's middle of the afternoon. We left, God knows what time, 4 o'clock. So we're in Nebraska somewhere, and it's late afternoon, and there's this storm. And it was really something. You could look up at the sky, and you could see, like, little funnel clouds kind of come down and go back up. You know, you could just see them. You know, because over there, there's no cars. You can look around. You're not in front of you. And so they got all these guys on the radio. Because whenever you went from one AM spot to another, you'd hit the seek, and you'd pick up the same guy of like the next little station over, right? So one guy calls in, and people are calling in saying what they're seeing, funnel clouds and whatever. So some guy calls in, and he goes, "Hey, this is Joe. I'm seeing this funnel cloud. Joe, where are you?" "Well, I'm in my truck." "Joe, where's your truck, you idiot?"
"Yeah, where's your truck?" Right.
But the weird part is we move up forward, and all of a sudden we go through this period of maybe a mile where the amount of big tractor-trailer units in the ditch.
Oh, yeah.
But it wasn't a tornado. It was just what you were talking about. It must have been some kind of a lead 70-mile-an-hour blast. They were just all on their side in the ditch. Thank you, kids, for being late, because that could have been us. But I don't know if it would have blown us under in there, but maybe it would have.
Well, that's actually a fairly it's funny out in the western plains area, you know, Wyoming and stuff like this. There's a joke about that the truck trailers, they need to go to sleep, and so they just sleep on the side of the road.
Yeah, well, I've seen them on the entrance ramps and stuff. They pull over.
Yeah, you know, they're just tired. Because those kinds of the wind levels out there are something that if you've never experienced them, you have absolutely no clue. And we're not talking about storms. We're talking about clear days.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been out there when I've been traveling out in that direction, and I'm getting 25, maybe even close to 30 miles per gallon with my truck and the trailer behind it. And I'm like, how's this?
You're going downwind.
Well, yeah. I mean, and then you stop to take a leak, right? And the door nearly gets ripped out of your hand when you open it. It's like, oh, all right, that's what's going on. Yeah.
We had we were
basically, I have a tornado behind me.
We decided to drive to for whatever reason. We went to all these different places. We decided to go to Big Sky, that area up there.
Yeah.
Well, of course, you got to go north of Yellowstone to get there, right? And then come down.
Yeah, I know exactly what it is.
So I'm going through a Bozeman. You know, it's like at 4 in the morning, and we went across this like kind of a sort of a bridge or something across this big open area.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a big Jeep Cherokee, it was heavy as hell, and I'm hanging onto the wheel for dear life. I mean, it was just one way then the other. I can't imagine going across that an 18-wheeler. So well, hey, I'm going to actually give a retraction, you know, which of course the president would never do. I mentioned yesterday that Luxembourg had only put out, you know, they do false teeth. So, of course, I'm vilified on text here because, you know, I'm accusing the president of being wrong, right? Well, I was wrong. It was actually Liechtenstein because when I went through So yeah, that makes that big of a difference, but it's Liechtenstein.
Well, it starts with an L.
Yeah, but now those are the guys we're supposed to hate. I don't get this whole, and why anybody believes this stuff, I have zero idea. So yesterday, you know, I'm trying to be somewhat, you know, this whole idea with selection and we're trying to stop this, stop that. Well, yesterday, I mean, and I stopped reading the reviews. I just listen to what people say, meaning the spew coming out of the White House. Right. And yesterday, we're talking about the Fed meeting this week, and the guy can't shut up. It's talking about he loves Warsh, and Warsh is going to do the right thing. There's no way on God's earth the guy can cut rates. Then he starts talking about he loves Warsh, but the other people on the committee are, something to the point of being seditious or something. I'm like, what are you talking about, you dumb, gross man? I mean, We're going to accuse the people that don't vote for a rate increase now of being seditious?
Well, the IRX says rates are going up.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, you know, and as I've pointed out for, like, you know, 30 years or so, the Fed doesn't actually set anything. The Fed follows the market. You would instantaneously destroy the institution if... Now, can you talk people into going where you want them to go? Well duh. Okay. By the way, speaking of talking people into where you want them to go, tomorrow, Fauci is going to have to testify.
That should be interesting.
Despite his pardon. By the way... Not only is he, as I pointed out, the man's a megalomaniac, and his insanity extends all the way back to the time of AIDS when I went after him for exactly the same sort of bullshit.
But the president was absolutely on his side.
Well, and by the way, both presidents, okay, well, both sides of the aisle.
Well, because Reagan was convinced it was just a gay disease and was God's wrath.
Well, and oh, by the way. Had in point of fact, what they tried to sell me and every other young man on was that any woman that I slept with was going to kill me,
yeah.
Or that I was going to kill her. Okay, that incidentally turned out to be a complete pack of lies. But one of the absolute worst elements of this was that before we had any kind of actual effective treatment. We just hadn't discovered what they were, or what it was. Okay, I mean today you can get it, and although it still screws you, there are ways to keep it attenuated to a degree that doesn't screw you right away.
In those days, it was a brutal death.
It was a brutal death and a certain death.
Yep.
Okay, there was absolutely nothing that you could do to stop it. However, we knew one of the things that killed. Because what ultimately killed you wasn't the virus; it was the fact that your immune system was destroyed, and so things that normally
it was like a cancer death.
It was very similar to a cancer death, and in fact, weird cancers were one of the things that ultimately got a huge percentage of those people. Cancers that you just never see in healthy people. But one of the things that did get people repeatedly was a form of bacterial pneumonia. And it was something that essentially never killed healthy people, but it killed a huge percentage of the people that had AIDS. And we knew in the 1970s how to stop those deaths, because there, for a long time, of course, leukemia has this habit of getting kids, right?
Wasn't the first AIDS case traced to like 1959 in St. Louis or something?
Well, as it turns out, no. As it turns out, the actual virus has been around for an extremely long time, but it was our, shall we say, we could go into this and maybe.
Well, we'll do it someday on a Friday. But I seem to recall reading
on a Friday. But anyway, the point.
But didn't some lady go back and review somebody's DNA, some guy's sample? From like 1959, they had a mysterious death and found out it was AIDS or something. I remember reading that someplace.
Yeah, but actually, it goes back further.
Okay, it goes back further.
We'll go someday. We'll do this one. But the point being, Fauci, we knew in the late 1970s, like 1978, 1979, that a cheap off patent antibiotic used as a prophylaxis, Bactrim, to be specific. Prevented children who were being treated for leukemia, which of course trashes your immune system during the time that you're taking the chemo, from getting this particular bacterial pneumonia. And that discovery, it still stands today as the single largest difference maker in terms of mortality for people that get leukemia.
Well,
because that was an extremely common cause of, you know, it wasn't actually the cancer that killed you, it was this infection that you got while you were being treated for it, okay? So, I mean, it was a groundbreaking, earthquake-level discovery when it was made. And I know about this because I have a nephew that was killed by leukemia, right? And
right.
I also have another friend of mine who
has. It's amazing how when you know somebody, how it gets emblazoned in your brain a little more.
Well, you know, So anyway, but in the early 1980s, when the AIDS was the rage, Fauci actually blocked Bactrim from being used by people that had the virus.
Now, why would he do something like that?
Because he was absolutely convinced that AZT, which was a failed cancer drug that had failed on safety, was the answer to this disease. And by God, he was going to prove it by giving everybody that. And incidentally, Burroughs Wellcome was the manufacturer, and at the time, it was the most expensive pharmaceutical drug ever prescribed in the United States. He was wrong. AZT did not save a single person's life. It did change things in terms of the pharmacology of how the disease progressed, but it also destroyed the bone marrow. So if you didn't have HIV and you took it, it gave you AIDS. It didn't save a single person in the way it was used at the time. Now, today it's part of the suppression protocol that they use at a very low dose. But at the time, Fauci was absolutely convinced, and he managed to get written into the standards of practice that Bactrim was not to be given to people that had this disease on a prophylactic basis. He did that. He personally was responsible for it. And the same crap happened when COVID showed up with remdesivir in the hospitals. The exact same thing.
This whole stuff that happens like this, it's really...
Well, and
it's so bizarre. It's almost like you can't believe it, but it's
true.
Well,
here's the really damning part of this. He wrote it all down. They found his... And he did it on a government computer, so it was in the archives. They found the diaries... The fact that he knew that very early on that this virus was no more dangerous than a bad seasonal flu, a very bad one, but it was not. And then he testified that it had a fatality rate of 10 times what he factually knew and wrote down on paper.
Well, here's a...
If there are people that deserve to hang, listen,
I
was pardoned, but you know what? There are pardons that are so that the person who grants ought to be hanged instead.
I'm not disagreeing with anything. I just wonder when you see people go through a red light, you know why they're doing it. They're in a hurry. Duh. What would possess somebody to do this?
Money.
He's not Musk. He's not. I mean, he's got some dough.
No. Oh no. The way that and by the way, you could talk to Congress about this. The government has allowed people who are employed within those parts of the government infrastructure to profit personally from the drugs and treatments that they come up with.
Funny, you should mention that.
They get royalties off of that.
Funny, you should mention that. Is a guy who always manages to know what I'm going to say next. Here is a, I don't know if you saw this morning, SpaceX stock purchasing by Congress members fuels conflict concerns.
Yeah.
Okay, here, this is enough. If this doesn't chill your morning, by the way, I'm being fact-checked here that Reagan never actually said that, but he allowed all the Christian guys around him to say it. Okay, well, I don't know what the difference there is.
Not so sure that matters, but yeah, okay.
Representative William Timmons, Republican, South Carolina; John McGuire, Republican, Virginia; Dan Miles, Republican, Pennsylvania, but not to be denied; Gil Cisneros, Democrat, California; Jared Moscovich, Democrat, Florida; and Don John James, Republican, Michigan. So 4-2, but I don't think that makes any difference. Or members of their immediate families bought between roughly 83,000 and 245,000 SpaceX shares combined, all within 6 days of its IPO. Well, you're down money, so good.
Yeah.
Five of the lawmakers serve on committees whose work intersects with SpaceX defense, satellite, AI, federal contracting, or securities business. Okay, but these transactions are legal. There is no evidence of insider trading, but an ethics expert said the holdings create potential conflicts between lawmakers' duties and financial interests. So if this is legal, and this is the way we want to act, you know, why have I stopped for red lights my whole goddamn life?
Yeah.
I mean, if this somehow is considered okay, what are we doing?
Well, here's the reality. For a very long time, Chief, as I think you know, as I think most listeners know, our government has gone from being something that has some semblance of representation and some semblance of acting in the public good. Okay, I mean, it's never perfect because humans make mistakes. That's expected, right? We're not perfect creatures. At no time have we ever been. But it is now having a public office, doesn't matter what level it's in, has simply become a gatekeeper on a license to steal in some form. And who you screw or even kill in the process is irrelevant.
All right. Well,
and I'll tell you, all this AI stuff, and it's starting to come apart now. And by God, it's about damn time. And I've pointed out that the cycle has turned. So the idea of being able to rescue people with more printed up credit is not going to work this time. And anyone who thinks it is going to get a very rude surprise in their portfolio. But the problem here that you have, I mean, you take a look at, you know, Elon and his SpaceX stuff, right? He puts up a data center in Tennessee. He can't get the power. Now, he didn't bother trying to figure out whether he could get the power first before he put the thing up. Okay, which you think you do, right? I mean, if you're going to build you're going to make rail cars or whatever, you think you try to figure out if you have the electricity necessary to make the steel and stuff, right? No. That'll be fine. We'll just bully our way through this. Well, of course, essentially all the power in Tennessee comes through TVA, just because of that's how it is. That's where the sources are. And he could not get the power he needed to operate his data center. So he sticks turbines across the river. He apparently knows that if he tries this crap in Tennessee, he might actually end up going to jail or get a shutdown.
Oh, he'll never do that. He's above the law.
Well, but he might get a shutdown order out of the government. All right, he wouldn't get away with it in Tennessee. So he puts these gas turbines that are not rated for continuous operation. And the whole reason he didn't buy the combined cycle ones that are is that they got like a 6-year lead time. Okay, you can't just like order one and have it tomorrow. It doesn't work like that. These things are extraordinarily complex, and they're spoken for. All right, so he puts these ones that can be used for backup. In you need a very large backup for some sort of a.
Hey, let me know when Joel Powell's in, will you?
Okay, some sort of installation. He sets them up and uses them for prime power. Now, the reason they can't be used for prime power generally is, well, first off, you'd be, unless you wouldn't want to, because they're not as efficient as the combined cycle plants. But they also don't have the pollution controls on them.
I'll bet the generator on top of the old SIBO building is the new data center is going to plan on using it all the time.
Well, you can't, okay? I know, Chief, but the point being, he didn't even bother trying to get the permit. He just put the things in and turned them on. All right? Now, what that's doing is emitting a huge amount of nitrogen oxides into the local air source, into the local environment. And who's he screwing? Black people, because that's the majority population there.
Well, I don't understand... Two things, and Joel, as soon as you're there, pile in. I don't understand two things. One is coming from an exchange where a lot of people thought the outside world had an idea that you were, people trading the exchange floors were all crooks, which is absolutely wrong. But the people on exchange floors were very aware of that, so yeah. They absolutely did not want anybody cheating because they knew. We'd be
7 o'clock news.
Well, we'd be tired with the same brush.
Yeah.
But the thing about Congress is I still believe, because I met a lot of these guys years ago, now maybe things have changed that much, that the lion's share of them are absolutely honest and absolutely okay. I mean, especially people come from the small towns and so forth.
Sorry, you're wrong.
Okay, but let's say half of them are. Why you would ever let other people to do this so you would get judged the same way? I don't get that. I mean,
that's why I say they're not.
Well, but here's the way. As a guy who was a chairman of committee for 25 years, the first thing you would do if you wanted to do some sort of some sort of moral thing here is if I was a committee chairman and I had a list of all the bleeps on my committee that owned SpaceX stock, the first time the name came up, I would kick those guys out in the hall. By the way, you're recusing yourself. I don't. When I was the chairman of the DPM committee, which was the rule to SIBO, you weren't supposed to vote on anything or even be part of the discussion if it involved your crowd. My buddy John Jaron was the first DPM on the committee. He spent the last most of the time in the hallway with a handful of cookies. Jaron, get out of here! I mean, do these guys even think of something like that?
Well,
I'm thinking no.
Chief, they don't care.
No.
And the problem is this. I told you about the guy that I helped get elected to the House out of Michigan, all right, Kenny Benvolio. What he ran into literally in freshman orientation. Okay, literally. They, for all intents and purposes, confiscated his personal electronic devices. Now, my intention, after he got in there, I was going to go up to Washington and, on my own time, using nothing other than equipment that he had that was ordinary pedestrian, PC-style equipment, set up an absolutely secure means for him to do things within his office. Not anything outside the office, but within his office that nobody was going to break into. That he was the only one with the keying for it, the only one with the ability to authorize people or disauthorize people, and by God, if he wanted to have confidential conversations within his staff, he had the absolute right to do it, just like you, I, or anybody else. All right, and because he was told that if he put something like that up, they couldn't legally stop him from doing it, but he'd have absolutely zero committee assignments. He'd get nothing.
Who are the theys? Who told him that?
The GOP.
Now, who's in charge? I mean, who's the party boss?
Well, apparently this is there is an infrastructure. There's a pecking order within all organizations. Okay, there's one within Congress too. There's actually two of them: one for the Democrats and one for the Republicans. And he was ordered to surrender his personal electronic devices at freshman orientation.
Well, how do you not go out and buy a burn phone? Screw him.
Well, you could, but how are you? Okay, that's nice. Now, what are you going to trust your communications to Google?
No.
Well, okay, there's the problem, right? Where are you going to put them? Well, that was what I... I canceled my trip because there was no point. He was told, basically, if you have this, and we will catch you if you've got it, which, of course, they would because they'd see the traffic.
What if he wanted to have a... I actually looked at this once, but, of course, I know nothing. There's actually an email group out of Europe that if you and I are both in there, our stuff goes back and forth, and it's supposedly scrambled or something.
The thing is that, I mean...
I never used it, but...
Well, it could have been set up, Chief. Okay, and I mean, like, you can communicate with me using a protocol called S-MIME, and there's absolutely no way that anyone other than you and I can read the messages. In fact, once I send you one, unless I kept a copy, I can't decode it. You can decode it, but I can't, and vice versa. So the thing is, these are not, this is state-of-the-art stuff, but it is publicly available. It's not that complicated to set up. It's just a matter of maintaining your own hygiene and using it so that it doesn't get breached. Okay, that's it. But the fact that you're doing it can be detected. What it says doesn't. But yeah. So Joel, by the way, Joel's up. So
I think we have Kenny, but I'm not sure. But if you want to pile in a little bit with Hal, feel free, because he always loves it, and so do I.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, but Joel.
Because money supplies number is coming out today, so I want your thing on that, considering the Fed. Joel, how are you, buddy? Unmute thyself.
Yeah, he's there, but he's got the little red thing. The Mikey Offy.
Well, when he pops
good morning.
Up.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, man? How are you?
Two weeks. I'm a little bit rusty here. How you doing?
All right. I had a great visit with your partner,
Brentster.
Yeah, and your podcast
on the Stock Trader Network. You know what? We never talk about the Stock Trader Network, and everyone knows about pre-market prep, but that competes with stocks and jocks a little bit. We're on from 8 to 9 Eastern. But the Stock Trader Network I don't really talk about is something I've created with my partner, Dennis. Dennis Dick, longtime vet. We've been trading and investing together since 1999. And besides the pre-market prep, what we did for Benzinga, a lot of people don't know we're not with Benzinga anymore. We're independent. We have our own thing, Stock Trader Network, and we basically are providing another 4 to 5 hours of content per day.
But Dennis isn't the guy who's on it. Who's the guy who's on it? That's Josh, right?
You were on with Brent today.
Brent.
Yeah, or the other day. Brent, okay, ran the Benzinga news desk.
Okay. Okay,
for several years. And along with creating, because people don't have time to listen to content, right? They're busy people, busy families, working in jobs. Well, we've created our own news feed, Chief, and you are on the list to be introduced to the news feed as a power beta tester. Now, I know you watch a lot of different things. I know you stick to your options and your fundamentals and some technicals here. But, boy, if this is not a news-driven market, I don't know what is. So we're working. It's called the STN News Feed, and I've been off for a little bit.
Well, half funny, half serious. Are you going to pay up to get the fast feed from the president?
It's funny that you asked that. We have one of our, I don't know, I don't want to give this away to our competitors here or not, but it's no big deal. You know how when you look at like your different news sources, you can have different tabs. You know, like different news wires, different sites. But we have a tab dedicated to Trump's Truths. So they come right into our feed. We have integrated not a whole lot of people from Twitter because there's so much you-know-what on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
But we have integrated some of what we feel of the more established Twitter followers as long as Trump's Truths. And they're right there. So you can get them as they... as they come across the tape, and whether you think they're important, whether you think they're silly, they're relevant to the market. So I've said this before, then we can get to the markets. If anybody has any questions about pre-market prep or the Stock Trader Network, please email me, joel@thestocktradernetwork.com. We'd love to introduce more people to it. But
I had a great time, and we got some phone calls, and everybody was some of the questions.
Smart cookies.
And Brent, he uses me as a. It's so much more interesting when you're being asked the questions. But he really likes to get into the history of a lot of this stuff and different times when markets might have been overvalued, undervalued, and I think he really loves hearing it. You know, because I've been around a while. So. But he does what Matty Weber accused me of. He goes, Chief,
what was that?
He goes, Chief, you're not like other interviewers. You actually listen to the answer and formulate your question as you go. He goes, nobody else does that. They have their list of five questions they're going to ask him no matter what. But he's that way. He listens to the answer. He listens to the answer, and then he formulates his new question. It's a very rare talent. So tell him that.
Okay. Well, that is something that, you know, when I've over the years have tried to train different people to fill in and do things, and that's the one thing. I mean, you can have your notes, you can be prepared, but what someone may say may be more interesting than what you want to follow. But
I've
been away from the markets for a few days.
A little aside, the reason why I had to do that, I can't write anything down because then FINRA wants to see all my notes. So they say, "Where's all your notes for all your shows? We want to see them." I said, "I don't have any." What do you mean you don't have any? I said, I don't have any. You have to have notes. No, I don't.
Is that...
FINRA wants to get up your drawers no matter what, right? So they want me, in case I'm doing something, you know, pushing some option trades or something, which I never do, they want to make sure. He said, how can you go on every day without any notes? I go, watch me or listen to me. So anyway, that's the reason why I sort of developed that talent, because I don't have anything written down. I can't.
It's funny because we go back and forth between, a heavily scripted show and then, going with the flow and stuff. And it just seems like we try to be disciplined and stuff, and we just go off on tangents or, you know, our guest says something that, you know, is more important. So it's interesting. It's interesting, but actually, I'm coming off my longest break of screen watching and being away in the market. I will say in maybe 3 decades.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you catch any fish? What were you doing?
Well, you know I love to go to northern Michigan.
Yep.
Right? And so did that with the family last week. And then, you know Jalen Rose, right?
Yeah.
Remember Jalen?
Yeah.
From the Fat Five?
Yeah.
Do you?
Well, I mean, I certainly know the name.
Yeah, NBA player all over ESPN. Well, he started the Jalen Rose Leadership Academy in downtown Detroit. And he started a school from scratch for inner city.
Is it like a charter school?
Charter school.
Okay.
And so there was a golf outing yesterday that my brother-in-law is a big contributor to the school. And so there's a golf outing. And the golf outing yesterday was at the TPC in Dearborn, a championship course. They haven't used it too much. And if I could brag a little bit, Chief, I was playing with my brother-in-law, who's a year younger. I'm not going to say my age. I was playing with my nephew, who's a hell of a lot younger, right? 23. And it just turned, and my brother-in-law's partner, who's in his early 50s, so younger than me. And I also got teamed up with a guy from my own hometown of Monroe, Michigan.
Is this a scramble, I hope?
It was a scramble. And I don't know how much you follow boxing or anything. You probably don't.
I used to when I was young. I'm not anymore.
Guy's name. But this guy was a junior middleweight world champion from the 1990s. His name was Bronco McCart.
This is regular boxing, not the kick.
Regular. You know, yeah, okay. I can't watch that other stuff.
Yeah.
So he was in my pairing. Okay. He was like, they put a celebrity pairing in there. And he's in his early 50s, too. Former world, junior welterweight.
Are you going to pick me up on 6th Avenue or on? Where are you going to pick me up? 48th Street?
50th.
What?
This is, 50th. I think Kenny's heading for an Uber.
Yeah. Where's his limo?
Yeah, where's his limo?
Yeah. Anyways, long story short, I know you got Kenny there, so he's going to hop in. Bronco McCart's the guy's name. He's from my hometown of Monroe, Michigan. Okay? Believe it or not, the small little town. I'll tell you right now, you know who, what our drives, 90% of the drives, you know who they used?
You.
Yeah. By 20 yards.
Wow.
By 20 yards. I can smash the ball. I can absolutely.
Good for you.
Smash
you,
the ball.
You hit the long, the chicks.
No, I lived in Monroe, Michigan.
No, you didn't.
I lived in Monroe, Michigan after I got out of the Navy. Well, when I went back to college, my third time, or my second time, I dropped out of college twice, but I was in the Navy for 6 years. I went to college for a year. I got a job in Michigan at the Guardian Glass plant in Carlton, Michigan.
You're kidding.
And I lived in Monroe, and then we ended up, my buddy and I, who were in the Navy, both of us were in the Navy, him and I moved to Newport, Michigan.
Oh my gosh, Kenny.
And we lived in a house that had me built as some summer cottage for a rich person from Detroit. We lived in it during the winter, you know.
Yeah.
And my roommate from North Dakota would walk down the river in Newport, and he'd go ice fishing on Lake Erie.
God.
He'd be out there for 8 hours.
Kenny, when was this?
This is Hal. We got to get Kenny on if he's here.
This is Hal, yeah.
Oh, Hal. I thought Kenny Pod.
Hal, Kenny, no, Kenny. I'm here.
Kenny,
it was
wait,
so much fun, man.
Let's, oh, my
so
gosh. Fun.
Well, let me
like
talk to
Hollywood
Kenny for
swears.
A few. Let me talk
Hal,
to Kenny for a few.
Hal, when were you there?
I was there, I think it was about, I got out of the Navy in 93. I think it was 90. I think it was about 94, 95. Yeah.
All right, Hal, you got to back right, off for
I
Kenny.
Gotta,
Joel, take care of yourself.
Email you. Hell, I'll email you. Kenny's on here. We got the.
Hey, I'm happy to join.
What?
Well, why don't you hang for a bit, and then Carl's going to come on with you, I think, a little bit, because we got everybody today.
Hal, I'll be talking to you soon. Okay, Chief, I'm sorry to get
no
to
problem.
Finish the story, but I can hit some drives.
Oh,
anybody
God.
Wants to challenge
good.
Me on your station?
Well, you know what they used to say back when Sammy Sosa was hitting the chicks dig the long one.
Go Blue.
So Kenny, what's up, buddy? Explain
not
this market.
I'm on my way to Fox. I didn't realize I didn't have the mute on. I apologize.
Well,
I
the question
the when I
three people said, why doesn't he have a limo?
I was in a car. I asked the guy, where's he going to pick me up on the way out after I get done with the at the interview? He's going to pick me back up and take me down to the train station so I can go home again.
So you are in New York?
I'm in New York. I came on Sunday. I'm here. I had some Yahoo stuff yesterday. I'm going on with Maria this morning at 8:20 on Mornings with Maria for a quick hit on markets, and then I'm going back to Cape Cod.
Someday, if I ever get a chance to meet Maria again, I know I will shock her with the idea. The first time we talked, I was young and she was in a white bikini.
Well, that where was that?
We were at the Options Industry Conference down in Scottsdale.
Yeah.
And she came down to be the keynote speaker. Very pretty lady, yeah. Very pleasant. And looked pretty good in the bikini, if I remember correctly. I'm not so sure either one of us are running around in bathing suits these days, but, you know. But that was then, you know. I said, we were okay. So, hey, what do you make of the thing that went on in Korea? Is that the big crash over there? Is that the amount of margin those people have?
I think it's a combination of things. Yes, I think it's an overdone tech sector, continued to be overdone because we see it still under pressure. I think there was a lot of borrowed money. I also think that it's the algos that pile on each other and they just start to spin out of control, which is an ongoing problem in markets anywhere, whether they're in Korea, whether they're in the United States, whether they're in Europe. The technology allows for that swift repricing of stocks, and then they pile on, and so it creates this exaggerated move. So I didn't see the whole story, what happened overnight.
Well, it was over a period of, they were down like 30% over a week or 10 days, but they were talking about how some people ended up with, you know, 100% margin loans, 200% margin, some incredible number.
Yeah, well, people that take 100% margin loans, they deserve what they get. That's the whole point, you know? They don't understand the process. They think they're just going to jump in and stocks are going to keep going higher, and they're just going to borrow this money and buy stocks. And then they're going to get, you know, they're going to get their heads cut off. And so that's what happens, right? Which is exactly why you should be paying attention to margin rates and margin levels for people that just jump on board thinking they really understand kind of what's going on honestly they don't.
So I'm leading you on a path here. Have you checked the margin debt in this country the last few months?
Yeah.
You seen it?
It's soaring. I don't know what it is, but I heard somebody soaring.
We're up 20% in 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't trade on margin, so I'm not one of those people, number one. Number two, I think that's exactly the problem, because as the sectors start to get hit, you know what happens. Then they get margin calls, and it's forced selling. It only causes stocks go lower, causes more forced selling. And so it feeds on itself. And why people don't seem to understand that is beyond me. But I never trade on margin, so therefore I don't get caught up in that cycle. But when it happens, then you have to take advantage of it. As a savvy investor, you take advantage of that panic that's happening, right? Because stocks aren't being sold because fundamental reasons have changed. They're being sold because, you know, there's a repricing just over risk, and then they get caught with their pants down, right? So now they have to sell.
But we, the U.S. of A, was around the $900 billion number, give or take, for a while. You know, and it was sometimes a little higher, sometimes a little lower. In the last 3 months, we've ballooned to $1.1 trillion.
Yeah.
So it's really almost 22% in the last 2 months. I mean, well, I guess 90 days, whatever you want to call it. That's absolutely unprecedented. I don't know.
It is unprecedented. But what happens is, look at what both Goldman and UBS told us last weekend, and look what Bank of America told us on Monday or Friday of last week about their bull bear indicator, right? UBS and Goldman pointed to their prime brokerage business, saying that the hedge funds are bailing on technology because it's overvalued, overpriced, and an overcrowded trade. Then we saw tech come under pressure for the last 5 or 6 weeks heading into earnings season because we were priced to perfection, and everyone kept saying, well, how much more can we do? And then the bull and bear indicator came out from Bank of America, which was 9.6 on a 10-point scale, which means it's extreme bullishness, which is actually a contrarian indicator because it's too extreme, right? It's too extreme. It's like the relative strength index. When it gets over 70, it's a technical sell signal for the markets or for individual names. And the same thing happened with both UBS and Goldman warning in their prime brokerage business, as well as Bank of America's bull bear indicator that it's way overbought in terms of everyone's expecting it can only go higher. Well, can't really go higher. Hey, that's exactly when it's going to go lower, and that's what we've been seeing. I'm not necessarily concerned about it because I don't think there's a fundamental change in the economy yet. I just think this is a repricing of risk from overbought levels.
What two questions on that on the economy piece, but one, how much of any of this is being caused, or I guess I did say caused, SpaceX? The amount of is it a player here? And then,
well, yeah, I think there's. I think you can weave the SpaceX story into it, right? Because everyone jumped on; it was going to be the most exciting thing. They couldn't wait to get in. Guys bought it all the way up to 225. Where's it trading this morning? 110.
Yeah, 110.
Likely going to about 80 once August 6th comes around, and 900 million more shares become eligible for trading. So I think it's going to go. I think it's going to go below 100, but I think we could see it go into the 80s. And then I think that's where it kind of finds some stability. But look, once it got added to the indexes, then all those passive investors had to buy it, so they had to rebalance their portfolio. So they had to sell some stocks to buy more SpaceX to balance their funds, their passive funds. And so that's certainly part of the story. Do I think it's the whole story? No, but do I think it's part of the story? 100%.
Well, listen on Wednesday, but we have a lady who's on. Just to get your kind of feel for what you hear on TV, and I'm not accusing you, but if you hear on TV, the pontificators versus what's going on with regular people. We have a lady comes on Wednesday, Larissa Demiak, and she's a professor at Purdue, and she was talking about how the numbers don't balance with regular people. So you can listen to CNBC all day, or Fox, or whoever, and you're going to have somebody who's bullish come on there and say, the economy's terrific. Look at retail sales. Look at this.
Right.
And she says, and she's a mom, two kids. So she goes, I'm spending, because of inflation, I'm spending more than I did last year. Matter of fact, I got a little bit of my credit card, which I never did before.
And buying less.
So, yeah.
She's spending more and buying less.
So we've cut out breakfast. We've cut out something else they cut out.
Yep.
And she goes, we've cut these things out. So if you're, somebody looking to, blow your own horn in the government, you can say, look at people who are still spending. She says, as long as you're lying with the CPI number and you don't look at the real number, you just look at, what you think is the number, the numbers are always going to look good, but they're really not.
Right. I agree with that.
But how does that split ever make it on TV? I guess is my question.
It's funny. There are some people that will pull that will say that. In fact, I've said it a number of times, especially during when we had the Biden inflation. They were talking about consumer spending, and that was clearly an obvious point. I think you could say the same thing now about what's happening to inflation under the current president, under Trump. I think it's the same thing. To your point, people are spending more, buying less, and they're eliminating certain things. And people just have to say it because that is the truth, right? It's not all a bed of roses when they go, oh, look at how strong the client that the consumer is, and look at how much money they're spending. Yeah, okay, but put it in perspective. Now, that being said, you're not trying to be a Debbie Downer because other parts of the economy continue to show robust signs, right? PMIs remain in expansion territory. You've seen housing starts do better than they had been. Building permits, right? All these other indicators seem to be holding in there. Now, are they necessarily, blowing the roof off? Not really, but they're also not collapsing. And so that you have to kind of be able to look at both of them and come up with where you really think the economy is. And right now, I think the economy's okay. Is it still K-shaped? For sure. And that's a problem. But I think we're going to start to see that change. I really do. I'm in the camp that it's going to start to, it's going to start to turn into a full-blown recovery for people that haven't been feeling like it. But let's see.
Yeah, I sure hope that from your lips to God's ear. I don't necessarily, I have a guy who does some odd jobs for me, and he was telling me how he works after work every day, works on weekends, and he makes this amount of dough, and all of a sudden, the transmission on his truck is shot.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's going to cost him like $4,000 or $5,000. And he goes, that's like how many months of working Saturday, Sunday, and after work?
Yeah.
It's not even the any kind of relative inflation number that you would have even thought of.
Yeah.
The idea that the price of a lunch is higher than minimum wage. I mean, we would never have thought that when we were younger.
Yeah.
I mean,
agreed.
I mean, the relative, and we have an administration, I guess, I can't help but be political on this. So we had somebody last week was telling me they bought a new truck, or they were looking at a new truck. It was like $80,000.
Yeah.
Trucks are assembled, especially the Silverados, a lot of them are assembled in Toronto, and we got President Buffoon telling he wants to put a 50% tariff on his stuff assembled in Canada.
Right.
What he wants,
right.
We wants a truck to be what, 160 or 120?
Right. Yeah, but you see, I also blame, because you're right, President Buffoon, but I also blame all the people around him that tell him, oh, that's a good idea, right? We should do that. Well, you know, where are, I respect guys like Scott Bessent. You know, where is he? Why doesn't he kind of stand up and say, listen, you can't do that. It doesn't make sense. That's what frustrates me, is because I do think he's got smart people around him. I just don't understand why they don't.
I don't know if he's listening. I mean, maybe he's not listening. But he's been on his tariff shtick since 1982.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know. I hear you. And you know, some of it you can understand when he's trying to, you know, when you were originally trying to kind of settle the score in terms of fairness. But then these latest announcements of tariffs on Canada and tariffs on all these other people, it's like exhausting now. Okay, stop already. That kind of, you know, that's how I feel about
plus,
it anyway. And I think that's how a lot of people feel.
When are people here going to realize that every tariff's a tax on them? I mean, are we ever going to think of that? The first thing you should think of, my prices are going up. It's a tax on me. It's a sales tax. But nobody does that. Why?
Yeah.
How have they been able to pull that wool over people's eyes?
Well, there are people that do say that, but then, you know, there'll be people that will try to dispute it, right? So it goes back and forth. I do agree with you. It is it ends up being a tax, especially, like you just said, Silverado trucks are going to go from 50 grand to 80 grand or 80 grand to 100 grand, whatever they're going to go, because of the tariff. That's a huge tax.
Well,
right,
yeah.
And it's a reason why you're not going to have to go out and buy a brand new Silverado if it's going to cost you 100 grand if you can't afford it, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's so bizarre to me, Kenny, that we put this tariff out there, which is, you know, if you read the Constitution for a second, revenue stuff's supposed to come out of the House. Okay, there's a million other laws and ways to get around it and that kind of thing, which probably shouldn't be there, but now he's going to use every one of them. So all of a sudden, we have a population that I thought by the time I got this old would be somewhat educated. Maybe.
Yeah.
And, okay, let me get this straight. He charged this tariff for a year and a half or whatever. Everybody paid, you know, somewhere along the line, you paid more. Maybe you got absorbed here or there in the other place. I mean, I could go through that, but I don't want to. But by and large, people paid more. And now all of a sudden, it's declared illegal. The companies that you bought the stuff from are going to get a check, not giving it back to you. And now we're going to try it again. Kenny, if you and I wrote a book like this, it wouldn't sell a copy.
No, yeah. Who would believe it?
Who would believe it? So what, you're on a...
I'm going on today at 8, I think it's 8:15. I actually have to get upstairs and get ready for it. But it's 8:15 on Mornings with Maria. I think it's Cheryl Casson who's actually hosting today. But, we'll be talking about certainly earnings. Coke came out, Boeing came out. There's a bunch of earnings across different sectors coming out. What's it really say about, you know, once again, what's it say about the economy?
What is Boeing?
We've heard from tech.
How did Boeing write off more money in this Air Force One? They've been screwing around with this thing for 10 years. Wasn't it an Obama deal?
Yeah, I think it was. I didn't read that story yet because it came out just as I was in the car coming over here. So
yeah, they say Air Force One costs way on results. For God's sake. It's been a decade.
Yeah.
And weren't those things already built? Didn't they get the couple off the line and were headed somewhere else? They were already built.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it, but whatever. All right, listen, I got to jump.
You take care, bud.
I talk to you, Mike.
SP Futures up a buck. NASDAQ Futures down 230. Do we have Hal? Do we have Carl? Who do we have?
Hey, what's up?
How are you? Are you waiting for the money supply numbers today like me?
Yeah, I got my spreadsheet open. I'm waiting for them to release it so I can update my quadratic trend.
Quadratic? I love quadratic.
I'm waiting. It's like Christmas, man. I can't wait.
Well, you know, I will warn you, though, Hal, that every now and then when there's a package that someone hands you, it is in fact a bomb.
But you know, my quadratic trend has been moderating. Right now, using the pre-today numbers, I only have the expected increase up 2.2% in a year from now. About a year ago, it was like 9 to 8, something like that. So
I think you might want to check one of the transistors in that quad thing, because if you look at the monthly, it's going straight up.
Well, this is, it smooths it out, and the correlation is like almost one. And it was projecting 9% a few years ago. Now it's only at 2.2. So I'm really, maybe it's down this last time because, you know, you got to be really careful with month to month, like we were talking about last time. you know, the CPI a month, the June CPI was calculated month to month was calculated on May to June, right? Well, if May's historically high, May to June's going to be possibly negative. But then when you go year to year, the previous June, well, it was low. So the year to year is high. So you just got to be really careful with this. And that's why I like smoothing things out.
Well, if you look at since, you probably got a deal where we were pretty steady really up to January. This is in the monthly now, in M2. Yeah. January to February was a pretty good spike, and then it slowed up a little bit to March. But
I'm also looking at weekly.
No, but March to April, April to May.
And my series isn't seasonally adjusted, so I do the adjustments in the quadratic trend that I'm following. So
right, well, I use April to May non-seasonally
adjusted weekly M2. That's what I use.
Well, April to May was a 13% annualized increase.
In month to month, you can get some very large or very negative month-to-month changes.
Well, the one that
so it's really important to watch it through a trend.
Well, the one that is weekly, that you still get weekly, is the Federal Reserve balance sheet. Yeah. And now we're back to where we were in December 3rd of 2025 when they pretty much stopped going down then. It's been going up since. So that was last December when...
Yeah, there was a really big spike in December of 2025, and there was a really big run-up.
Yeah.
That ended in April. There's a really big run-up that ended in April, but it came back down.
Well, the run-up seems to be starting again.
Yeah.
In other words, it hasn't stopped since this...
Yeah, it looks like it's back on an upswing, so we'll see where it's at.
The new Fed chairman
who's... One point in a series doesn't make a trend, right?
You just gotta observe
it.
The difference sort of is we have a new guy pounding the table that he's fighting inflation. Well, you don't do that by running the money supply up and the balance sheet up.
Yeah. Well, if he's doing what I think he's doing, when those securities that he has purchased or the Fed has purchased in the past mature, there's two things you can do. You can take that money you get from Treasury and buy new Treasuries, or you can just essentially bury it in the backyard, right?
Well, so, you put it back for whence it came.
Yeah, put it back in the backyard where it was created.
Yep.
Right? Not literally, but in the figurative backyard.
Yeah, right? Pretty much literally.
In the coffee can.
Yeah. You write the check from nowhere to cash.
Buy securities comes out of a coffee can, right? They digitize it into existence, and when those securities mature, you can put it back in the coffee can, or you can use that money you get from Treasury, the principal, the face value, and you can put it back into new Treasuries. And if he's putting it back in the coffee can, then I think he's gonna tame this what was very excessive M2 growth.
But that's not what his boss wants him to do.
Well, I know, yeah. Well, the boss wants him to lower interest rates. And you can lower interest rates when you have so many reserves in the banking system. I call them unemployed reserves. And it's just like unemployment when the minimum wage is binding. A binding minimum wage is going to create unemployment. A binding interest rate on reserves is going to create unemployed reserves. So when you have unemployed reserves and you have a binding price floor, the interest on rate reserves, the interest on reserves rate, when you have those two things in common, you can actually reduce the money supply and lower interest rates at the same time because you have a binding price floor. I'm not talking about treasury yields. I'm talking about the interbank rate. When the interest on reserves rate is binding, and it is, you can do two things. You can raise or lower the money supply, and you can raise or lower the interest on reserves rate at the same time. In the past, you couldn't do that, but now you can because the Fed has created all these unemployed reserves.
Well, they have issues, and Carl Pendleton, if you want, but there's all kinds of balls in the air here, and which is this is what. Actually, when I was on Joel's show the other day, that's what the guy was quizzing me about. I said, you know, none of this stuff is, well, feel free to disagree, Carl. None of this stuff is necessarily tradable, but you sort of want to be aware, which makes it kind of difficult to make a trade. If you want to be aware of everything, you never do anything, right?
The best way to be aware of it is to be in the revolving door of Treasury, the Fed, and the White House.
Good luck with that, Hal, for ordinary plebs like you and I. You know,
I won't get that job. My latest articles that I submitted to Mises about my freaking horror story that is the airline industry that I witnessed in person firsthand. Those two articles, I'll be barred from working for the federal government, for a Republican or a Democrat, because it's an indictment of the airline industry and several other industries.
Well, hello.
They're all cartels, of course.
They're all cartels. When you have falling quality, and that quality is reportedly bad for every member of an industry, that's when you know it's a state cartel. You know, there's an illusion of competition.
Yeah, but it's
an
not
illusion.
Real. Right.
Today, when we had kings and queens in Europe, we had a monopoly, a monopolist with a monopoly privilege, and there's one seller of a good product or service or transporter of goods. There's one providing that. Today, we have the illusion of the same system. Instead of having one person or one firm in the state monopoly, the government allows four or five people to operate within this cartel that it creates and protects. That gives it an illusion of competition. It is an illusion. It is not competition.
Well, as somebody, and you guys are a little younger than me, did you ever used to take planes before deregulation?
My first plane ride was when I was going to boot camp in the Navy.
All right, so
there you go.
But back before deregulation, this all happened somewhere in the 70s, right? And
by the way, it's not deregulation means fewer regulations. It's still regulated.
Well,
a lot of people will conflate
deregulation
with free market capitalism.
Okay, all right. Well, the definition at the time, and the definition changes. Back then, the rates were all regulated. Everybody charged the same amount. So there were a bunch of airlines.
But the airports were still owned by government.
Oh, okay. But I'm saying that the competition took a different guise. And the guise was service. That's why they weighed the stewardesses. That's why the girls on Braniff wore Gucci gowns and were gorgeous.
That's why Southwest Airlines flight attendants.
They were pretty. They were after regulation. Because back before, Southwest Air was only allowed to fly in the state of Texas.
Well, Southwest Air was one of the reasons for this inertia that was causing
this
breakup, because they were disrupting.
No, there was a. Imagine
this. Hopping from regional airport to regional airport.
All right, come on. I was in school. You guys weren't there yet, all right? I don't necessarily like to say I'm older and some stuff, but all this stuff, for some reason, Hal, came out of some unity, imagine this, between academia and college, and Congress. And all these people, the supply-siders of the world and those people, you had three arms of this. You had regulation in trucking. You had regulation in airlines. Railroads had some of that. And by the way, you had a specialist system for trading stocks. There were no option trades. So what the CBOE did was take, this is all part of the same time period. The CBOE said, we don't want no stinking specialists. We're going to have an open outcry system. We're going to have competing market makers like the New York Stock Exchange was 80 years ago. So they said, no, we really only want one guy here. So that happened. All of a sudden, your trucking, this is all in the late 70s, your trucking became deregulated. It used to be, if you had paper, like Illinois California Express, where I worked on the docks when I was in school, they had paper between Illinois, Colorado, Arizona, and California. They couldn't stop in Iowa. They couldn't stop in Nebraska. They couldn't go east. They could only go to the places that you had paper. So you had the paper was worthwhile, the license, or whatever you want to call it.
It was like a taxi medallion.
Yeah, so same thing as the airlines. So everybody paid the same price. So if you were in first class on Braniff, they'd bring out the prime rib, and you could tell them where to cut it. They did everything they possibly could to get you on that plane because it was the same price. And if the people treated you better on Braniff, you flew Braniff and not United. But then after a while, it became, when they started having the discount stuff, there'd be somebody a guy like Carl sitting there with a discount seat paying $99, and the guy next to him is paying $500 because he got his ticket the day before. And all of a sudden, your flight attendants, which are mostly all ladies at the time, all of a sudden started treating everybody like they were the $99 guy.
Yeah.
And other people got, they're saying, why are you demanding coffee when you only paid $99? But I used to fly, we used to go to Cleveland when I was at Allied Van Lines. The thing would be full, and the thing's only an hour in the air. You never saw anybody hustle like those girls to get everybody coffee, everybody a little something before they had to pack it in. They don't do that now. They don't serve crap, right? Because there's no reason for it.
You get looks.
You're
stuck, when you're stuck on the tarmac for six freaking hours
yep.
in a Frontier airline seat, I'm 6'1", you're 6'4". Tom, you couldn't fit in those seats.
Oh, I know.
And they're hard plastic.
Yep.
We were in these seats for 6 hours. And for the first 4.5 hours, they offered us one thing, a little cup of water. The guy in front of me complained about having to pay like $10 for M&Ms. They were selling snacks.
And you got to use your credit card. You can't even give them $10.
Yeah. And I joked with my seatmates, man, the last time I paid $10 for M&Ms, at least I got to watch a Broadway freaking play.
Yeah.
But you look at a flight attendant now in that situation where your facial expression could be interpreted as you're getting angry.
Yep.
You can expect TSA to jump on that plane and handcuff you and haul you away and put you in the terminal's jail. That's why everybody was so subdued, because they've seen the reports of passengers getting a little upset and then being handcuffed and taken off the plane.
Our man Carl's going to love this one, and he's going to be pissed that he didn't say it ahead of me.
And this isn't an indictment. This article is not an indictment on Frontier Airlines or Delta.
They're all saying
in Atlanta for 24 hours.
Yeah.
This is an indictment of the state cartelized system that masquerades as a competitive
market. When you pop out a new airplane, which doesn't happen too often, right? When you pop, pop out the new 737, somewhere, someplace, I think they still have to do this. You gotta fill the plane with a bunch of asses, right? And Carl, help me. They declare an emergency. You have to be able. All those people got to be able to get off. And what is it? Is it 2 minutes, Carl? 3 minutes, something like that?
They run tests on this, and there is now. Quite frankly, this is yet more government stupidity, if you want my opinion, because if the plane crashes and is on fire, or tries to land and the landing gear collapses or whatever, right? The controlled test and the real life incident are two very different things, because in the controlled test, everyone knows they're not going to die, right? In the real incident, that is exactly what you think is about to happen.
All right, but let's keep it simple.
But here's the thing: if you do not meet the requirements of being able to perform in those in that fashion, you can't sit in an exit row, for example. You know, you've got the door at your
It's not where I'm going with this. The plane comes out, and let's say the seats are 24 inches apart.
Right.
All right, and everybody gets on there, and I don't think a bunch of skinny people or what. This is not about comfort. It's about safety. Okay,
right.
Everybody off. Can people get off this thing using the wings and all the other stuff? Can people get off this thing in 2 minutes? And if you barely make it, the next week the airline goes, wow, we think we can put more people in here to move the seats 20 inches apart. They never have to redo the test.
Right. Well, and
which is insanity.
Problem. Well, not only that, but
if you could make the seats not recline.
Whatever it is, you never have to redo the test. Yeah.
Well, that's right, but Chief, it's even worse than that, because as you are well aware, I'm sure, there's a decent percentage of Americans that couldn't fit through that window exit.
Hey.
At all.
Yeah, well, that's probably true, too.
Okay, well, guess what? If you happen to be, if that happens, everybody behind you is dead.
Yeah, well, but the point is, they now have...
The flight attendants pretend that they're worried about the exit window, right? They come up to you. I got an upgrade. The only thing I got out of that whole ordeal was I had to pay for my flight from Charlotte to Dallas, and not to Charlotte, back to Raleigh. Might have paid for that, even though I didn't get to Utah. I think they apparently thought that was a good deal. But on the way back to Raleigh, they put me in the exit aisle. And they do the thing where, hey, you got to pull your headphones out and listen to what I got to say here for about 15 seconds. And they pretend that, you know, there's a responsibility in this exit aisle when, you know, if the plane's going down, the plane's going down.
I've seen a lot of people say, I don't want the responsibility and move.
I've never seen anybody do that, Tom.
I don't care one way or another. If I got to pull that door open so that people could get...
I'll be able to pull it open. I'm really good under pressure.
Yeah. Right? If that needs to happen...
I'll open it, but I don't expect to survive it, survive a plane crash, and then have the opportunity to open it. I just don't...
if you landed on the river, what's his name, Sully, you'd have been able to do it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that requires a very good... And that pilot was, what, former military, Air Force or something, and that was a highly skilled pilot. Yeah.
Did you read the... I want to talk more about this foreign debt here in a second, but did you read the a big summary of the whole thing? Somebody wrote into Quora, which I get all this wild stuff in there, about how come people are still saying that he should have made it to Teterboro instead of going to the river.
Yeah, I don't listen to that Monday morning quarterbacking. Well, I mean, this situation, he sucked up a bunch of geese in his engines, and... Frankly, whatever happens after that, if he can land it safely and people don't die, I don't money morning quarterback that. Well, I couldn't have done it. He did, and he's awesome.
Okay, but this is here's the summary from this guy was that if you did
who's the guy doing the summary? That's what I want to know.
Well, I don't know his name, but the computer reads. Okay, the computer reads are if the second it happened, he would have headed right for Teterboro. He probably could have made it.
Yeah. If at the second it happened.
Okay, that's where I'm going, Carl. But there's a protocol. Can you restart him? Can you do anything? That takes 35 seconds.
Right.
Him and his crew went through the protocol in actually 24 seconds instead of 35.
And by the time they got there, he couldn't have made Teterboro. But they said, and if he tried, it would have killed everybody.
Yeah,
on
they
board.
Said.
Yeah, and here's another thing.
Okay, what I'm saying
is, how many times does the guy take off and land in a given day? Yeah. And how many times has he done it over the course of his career?
Well, they're saying that he actually...
And what was the probability of him sucking in geese like that? I mean, you form expectations based on historical observation. And if every morning of his life flying for this airline, he never encounters such a thing, it's very difficult for him to, like, all of a sudden go, holy crap, this is not like the thousands of flights I flew previously, the tens of thousands of flights I flew previously. All of a sudden, I got geese sucked into the engine. Well, you're gonna have to, like, readjust. And he's not gonna be able to.
That's my point. If you take the exact computer simulation, he maybe could have made it. But the fact is, he went through the protocol 10 seconds faster than anybody thought he could. They made their decision very fast. In that 24 seconds, there's no way. He doesn't whack into a building on the way to Teterboro, and he did exactly the right thing.
Yeah, and the guy was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever there's an issue on the plane, I always look at the facial expressions of the flight attendants. Like when the turbulence can't get any worse, I look at them, and their facial expressions are saying, yeah, this happens, like, every time we fly. I'm like, okay, I feel better. When you've never flown before and you experience it, you think the plane's going to crash.
Well, it's almost
the
same.
Expectations in the facial expressions of the crew, and you know that they've been through it about 1,000 times. And this is what happened to the pilot who landed that plane in the Hudson. 1,000 previous flights, no issues whatsoever. You get up, you fly it, you land it, you get up, and it almost becomes boring because he's done it so many times. All of a sudden, this particular morning, he got some geese in the engine, right? He hasn't had his coffee yet. Well, it's going to take him a few seconds to get his bearings.
Well, it's not just his bearings. There's a protocol, but, you know, it's almost like it's sort of like trading in some ways.
Yeah.
That if you do, like, you know, covered rights for people, which we do for a lot of people, I won't say a retail trader because some retail traders aren't bad, but my stock's at 85. I sold the 90s. Now it's 92. What do I do? Okay, relax, chill. Let's look. let's see where the 91s or 92s are out in a couple of months. Maybe we can just roll up there.
I'd like to know what that guy would have done in that situation, given the long career of that pilot. Here's a great example. Three times in my life, a loved one was choking, and they were like, I don't know, 10 years, 5 years apart. Everybody at the table I was with, it never happened before. The first time it happened, my mom stood up and she's choking. There's like 15 people sitting at the table. I had never seen anybody that happen before. I had a little training, I think, in high school. I calmly walked over and I gave her the Heimlich, and she, you know, spit out like a half inch chunk of pork steak or whatever, right? Then it happened to my daughter, and then it happened, I think, to my mother-in-law. Every time everybody panicked, I just got up and I went over and gave the Heimlich.
It's
that guy writing that article is probably the guy that would sit and watch somebody else give the Heimlich. That's what I'm saying.
Well, he is
not that kind of
guy. He was pointing out the difference between the computer simulated what you should have done, but actually he did the right thing, was his conclusion.
Yeah.
But you know,
I just don't put much.
But some people have
effort into reading these Monday morning quarterbacking articles.
It wasn't a quarterbacking thing. It was just him saying the difference between.
It sounds like Monday morning quarterbacking.
No, he was saying that the conclusion of the computer that he could have made it to Teterboro was wrong, that he did the right thing, was his conclusion.
Okay, no, that's good then, yeah.
That was his conclusion. But what you're saying is...
The thing that said he could have made it to Teterboro, you know...
Was a computer...
Whoever did that, yeah, that's just Monday morning.
Yeah, that was... Oh, yeah.
Foley was awesome. Yeah, he didn't expect it that morning. He probably hadn't had his coffee yet. He's sipping on his coffee, and all of a sudden, he's got these birds in his engine. And what does he do? He makes sure everybody is safe and everybody survives.
But there are people that are calm when other people... I went to talk about this. Kyle, you'll love this, how things can screw up so much in the world. Audrey drags me to a science...
Well, the world's a crazy place.
Yeah.
The Bender from Breakfast Club said, screws fall out all the time. The world's an imperfect place.
Well, we go to the Sox game, and we got seats right behind home plate, right? So, of course, we go up with our tickets, back when you had tickets. And Audrey goes, oh, by the way, these tickets got stolen in the mail, so there might be some people sitting in the seat. So, of course, it's the night before Father's Day. So we got to get the security guard, because, of course, there's a couple guys in the seats. And we go up, and it turns out the guy had bought the seats from some guy who stole them, obviously. And he's got his dad there for Father's Day.
Oh, man.
And I'm going, all right, come on, let's just go sit somewhere else. No, okay. So security was really nice to him. The guy was, who'd you buy him from? They're trying to catch the guy. He said, tell you what, they're not these people, it's really their seats, not yours. But don't worry, we're just going to move you right over there, which they did. You know, so they were very nice about it. So, you know, they were three rows up. So they were, you know, told, because they didn't think anybody else was going to show up there. So they were real nice to him. But
so
they
that
said,
was an airplane that the father and son probably would have been jailed.
Well, but then they, you know, but they said, by the way, who'd you buy him from? The guy goes, this guy in the neighborhood, and he gave him the name. Okay, so anyway, so it's the first inning. The other team scores 10 runs in the first inning. So the Sox are down 10 to zip in the first. So we got this going for us. Then all of a sudden, some guy whacks a foul ball before they had those nets up. It just misses the screen. It was flying back and hits some girl right above the eye.
Oh, man.
And I got the feeling when I saw it hit that, you know, she wasn't going to lose her eyesight or anything. But, of course, if you ever got a hit up there, you bleed like a stuck pig. So she's bleeding. And all of a sudden, 20 people fly away like they, you know, like she was going to explode. And one guy within 5 seconds has got a clean handkerchief off next to her compressing the thing. And everybody else dashed one way, and he went in right to the spot, knew just what to do. There are people like that, and there's other people who just panic and run. And sure enough, the paramedics came down, and I think she was fine. A few stitches and stuff, but I mean, have you ever seen anybody?
Well, baseball's a funny game because you go to the game and there's a foul ball. You're like, oh man. Not anymore.
They got the nets all the way down, so you really can't.
Well, no, I'm talking about high school or college.
Oh yeah.
Well. So here's the other. Here's the amusing thing. I had tickets to the Savannah Bananas game.
They sold out Wrigley Field here, Carl.
Is that a real team, Carl?
Yes, it really is. And it's well, and they play what they call banana ball, which is sort of baseball. Okay, it's also sort of a show, kind of like the Harlem.
Yeah, it's the Harlem Goldfrash baseball.
I've seen it.
So here's one of the differences, though. A caught foul ball by a fan is an out.
Wow.
Okay, so if you foul a ball, all of a sudden, from the standpoint of the guys in the stands, that's a live ball.
Yeah, wow.
All right, because if I can catch it, the batter's out.
Well, can you imagine? Carl, a foul ball is coming to a fan that wants to catch it because they're a fan of the team at the plate.
The other guy drops next. It.
I can see somebody elbowing him in the face.
Well, this weekend they were playing the firefighters, so I don't know which. I guess you could have a.
I mean, there's a bunch of different.
Some unintended consequences to that policy.
Yeah, well, there's a bunch of really weird, like, ball four is not an automatic walk. There's all sorts of very odd.
Well, as an umpire behind the plate calling balls and strikes, I love that because it means I don't have to get as many outs.
I just thought it.
Yeah, but the umpire has to do some huge dance before the game. He's doing dance and doing splits and stuff. The umpire.
Hey, I don't mind doing that. I do that all the time in class.
I got a quick.
One of the things that was really amusing about this was that there actually became part of the game, the one that I was at, because there were a couple foul balls that were caught.
Well, I guess the umpires have been watching Frank Drebin, right?
Yeah. I got a quick foul ball story, and then we're going to go to break, and we got to talk about. What's going on in this Korea, these margin notes. I got the big list here of all the countries that owe us money, and so we owe money, too. I had four tickets right on the aisle, upper deck, first row upper deck, right? So, Big Dan had the tickets, and I split them with him. So we would get 4-4-2-2 for every series, right? So I sold... I had the 2 one night. So one guy on the trading floor, Kevin Kennedy, terrific guy. He used to buy some tickets for me. Hey, you got 2? Yeah, you can go. So I give him the 2, and he's up there, and there's these two other guys in the other two seats. And he goes, one of them, he goes, there's this huge copper guy. He's like 6'6". He's sitting there, and he's drinking a beer an inning, you know. And all of a sudden, the sixth inning, he's sitting there, and this foul ball, this was on national TV. It was on Fox or something. So he goes, this foul ball comes screaming right up at him. The guy sees the ball coming. Transfers his beer from his left hand to his right hand, reaches out with his left hand and just grabs a thing. This huge paw. Right? So evidently they replayed it about 10 times on Fox.
I wonder if he's a Mason. Those guys have huge hands.
So Kevin Kennedy's sitting right next to the guy. All of a sudden his phone's going off. All his buddies from my college. Kevin, is that you? what? Who is that guy? He goes, he's just some copper with 8 beers in him. But he said the guy, he never even, his expression never changed. He never stopped talking. He put his beer from his left hand to his right hand and reached out with his left hand and just grabbed a thing.
Yeah, I think those people are very rare.
Yeah, he goes, the dude, and then he just.
Some people don't panic.
He didn't even know that the camera was on him. Didn't care what Beck could drink in his beer and order another one. he goes, I was the most popular guy in the country. I must have got 20 texts. S&P Futures up 8 and NASDAQ Futures down 189. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jacks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomo. Ricky on the board. S&P Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures down 182. Our good friend Kevin said that the White Sox outfielder was in the AL All-Star game. Kristen Peters played for the Savannah Bananas. And you know who played for the Globetrotters? Well, Bob Gibson did, and I think, didn't Wilt play for a summer? I think he did, but I know Bob Gibson played there.
The Globetrotters
were... Yeah.
I was a kid, the Globetrotters.
They were huge.
I loved the Globetrotters. Yeah, they were fun.
Metalock Lemon, and who was the guy? Curly Neal was the dribbler guy?
Oh, Metalock Lemon was awesome.
Anyway, Over in Asia, we've got the... Let's talk about the Dow here for a second. It's up 433. The Dow's been really marching to a total different drummer than the NASDAQ. And we're going to ask our two gentlemen here to opine as to why whenever the NASDAQ goes down, Microsoft goes up. This is the most bizarre thing I've got. Sherwin-Williams is up 21 today. They had earnings yesterday. Goldman Sachs is down 5, but we've got Amgen up 485. Boeing up $1.42, and they keep blaming their problems on Air Force One. Jeez, the thing's been a 10-year problem. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 2,500. These guys, the chip sell-off over here is getting pretty extreme. They're down $2,500. That's 4%. Hang Seng up 103. Not as bad. 0.4%. Obviously not bad at all. They're up. Shanghai down 44, 1.16. And the Korean market has been getting hammered. Those guys are... And we'll have Carl talk about that. DAX up 27.1%. FTSE up 56.5%. CAC up 16.2%. So mildly bullish in Europe. Bonds down 1 basis point to 10-year 4.63%. The Bund unchanged at 3.12. Oil, we're down $1.24. We're down to 81.37, which is way better than the 90 something it was a couple weeks ago. Not as good as it was 68 a few weeks ago, the last peace effort. But right now we've got somewhat of a peace effort going on. Let's hope that works. RBOB unchanged, 3.32, which should put you with taxes if the guy's buying it today somewhere in the fours. Although I think it's probably a little cheaper than that most places. Gold down $44, 4,032, which keeps bouncing off this 4,000 up and then coming right back down. Silver down $1, 57.64. I think some central banks are having trouble with their currencies, with the dollar being strong, are selling some gold. Foreign exchange, euro is still 113.61, so the dollar is still strong. Same thing with the pound. We're almost pushing 164 on this yen, with 160s. 160 is their panic point, so I wouldn't be counting on Japan to actually finance our deficit anytime soon here. Crypto down 1,500, 63,344. A lot of stuff there, Ricky. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 70 degrees right now with a high of 77. Breezy and less humid today with hazy sunshine. Tonight will be clear with a low of 67 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now with a high of 109. Couple of morning showers and very, very warm. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 90 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's looking at 19 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook is 33 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 30 minutes. 22 minutes inbound Dan Ryan from 95th. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is 28 minutes. Let's talk sports super quick. Yesterday, Diamondbacks lose to Pirates 3-2 and White Sox lose to Yankees 9-5. But the Cubs beat Cardinals 7-3. Today we got D-backs at Pirates 5:40 p.m., Yankees at White Sox 6:40 p.m., and Cubs at Cardinals at 6:45 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you.
All right, guys. Balls in the air. We've got inflation continuing to creep a little bit. We've got these long-term rates. Every time we got to 5% on the 30 and 4.5 on the 10, we went right back down. This time, not yet. We're still 5.1 on the 30, or we're still 4.6 on the 10. Whether they go back down or not, so far they haven't. So that's kind of a ball in the air. We've had this Korean fiasco. Again, we'll see where that all lands, where that market comes back. We've got Japan struggling with their exchange rate. Probably not going to be investing too much over here because they've been selling some bonds to try and prop up their currency. We got margin loans here in this country up $200 billion in 3 months. It's 20% of the total. I don't think I've ever seen that. Again, these are balls in the air. The market is down some. Could mean somebody's stocks are a buy. How do you put all this together? Why don't you go first, Al? What do you do with these?
Anytime you have these stories of stock markets rising and collapsing and Microsoft rising when the NASDAQ's falling, anytime you read stories like that, or the news, the economic news seems contradictory, it's just a result of, like, for example, maybe Korea and Japan versus the United States. Just, to me, it's just an indication that we're not as inflationary as their countries. That's kind of what I get at. I mean, all these scenarios are the central bank of that particular country has inflated too much, and if markets collapse in one country versus the other, then that country probably inflated more. So it's just how the market kind of restores order, I would think, So to me, it's nothing other than, central banks printing too much money. And some do more of it than others. So.
Well, that's true. I mean, and the margin stuff gets kind of worse and worse.
When you throw in margin debt, holy crap.
Well, that's another.
What are the margin rules in places like Japan and Korea? I mean, is it like the United States, or is it the Canadian?
Well, no, in Korea, it's like, you can do like more than 100% or something. I don't know. It's some crazy
number.
Yeah, so
it's
even
worse. It magnifies it, right? It magnifies it even worse. It's like real estate. An investor's not going to buy an apartment condo with 100% cash. The investor's going to use 1% down, 1% leverage to purchase that condo. Even though the investor might have $1 billion, they're not using cash. Elon Musk didn't use cash to buy Twitter. He didn't have cash. If he tried to raise cash, he would have collapsed his stock price. So they have to use leverage.
It's hard for me, and really with all the tremendous guests we have, even Russell, who's a pretty reasonable studier of China, can't really pinpoint who had the Chinese property debt that went down. I mean, the thing that is surprising to me, and I'll kick this to Carl, is the amount of money involved is something in all my years this stuff went up and it's coming down, okay, but when you take an NVIDIA going from 212 like a month ago down to 195, so what? Wait, whoa. There's 25 billion shares outstanding. That $17 move is what? $300 billion in market cap. It's more than like the biggest company was in 2010. Micron is down from went flying way up. It's down from roughly 1,200 to 834. Okay, maybe didn't quite make it to 1,200. They've got a billion shares outstanding. It's 400 points. It's $400 billion. Somebody is getting nailed with some of this stuff someplace, and you never seem to know who the somebodies are. I mean, how would you sum this up, Carl?
Well, I think it's both more complicated but simpler. Right? When we really get down to it, all we're talking about here is scale. And, of course, none of us were alive in 1929, so all we have is what we read, right? The shoeshine boy, though, was allegedly handing out stock tips on why he really didn't need to shine shoes anymore.
Yeah, but he was a shoeshine boy in Grand Central Station. He wasn't a shoeshine boy in Georgia.
Well, I understand that, okay? So he saw the guys come by that were telling him, hey, pick up 10 shares of this or whatever, right? But the thing is, what you have now, and where these things come from that ultimately lead to the biggest crashes, and we're on the cusp of one today. And anyone that believes that's not going to happen, you got rocks in your head.
Well, it may not happen, but we're on the cusp of one.
The cusp of one. It is going to happen. And the problem is that for the last, it's been 30, 40 years now, the reaction to any of those kinds of things by the government has always been more credit, finance it, stick it on the public balance sheet. Okay, that's... And that may not be what they tell you, but that's the effect of what has occurred. All right. When the 2008 blow up happened, there were multiple instances, including IndyMac and Colonial, where the reason those institutions blew up was outright fraud. It was not that somebody got over their skis and made bad investments or anything like that. The Colonial situation had to do with TBW. It was out and out fraud in their mortgage deck. They had, within the space of less than a month from when they announced earnings, all of a sudden a third of the value of their assets disappeared. Now that physically can't happen unless somebody stole it. Okay, and the way it was stolen was by misstating what they were doing, of course.
Well, misvaluing because they were paying themselves bonuses on money they never made.
But the same thing was what started me writing my column was in 2007 when the original disruption occurred in the Asian markets. Overnight, one night, all of a sudden, the Asian markets just blew up for no apparent reason. All right, there was nobody who said this company, detonated and that and that. Okay, that's plausible, right? I mean, things like that happen. No, it wasn't that somebody set off a nuclear bomb in the middle of Korea, right? Or something like this. It just was an inexplicable thing. All of a sudden, this happened. So I start digging around,
And I find that Washington Mutual is paying out dividends out of capitalized interest, which is not actual money. Okay? And in fact, but for that, that dividend was in fact more than their cash earnings in the quarter. All right? So in other words, they were literally paying out a dividend with money they did not have.
Yeah. What is now? The,
there's a reason for it.
But Hal, this
there's a cause to that symptom.
Well, I understand that, but here's the thing: that I wrote an article. The first article I wrote was specifically on that particular thing that I found in the earnings report. Okay, and I said this is absolute. And by the way, that kind of activity is prohibited by prompt corrective action, Section 1381.0. It's literally illegal because the FDIC is required under the law to detect these things and stop them before they can bankrupt a bank.
Carl,
okay?
quick question, or maybe Hal, you know the answer. Back when companies did pay a lot of dividends, I mean, I give a huge lecture in Europe to a bank trading group about dividend plays. I don't even know what that even is anymore.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's...
No, okay, what I'm saying... So, I have a specific rule question.
Yeah.
If you're a company, say you're telephone, okay, and every month you send out a check for, you know, 40 cents a share or something, which they did for a bazillion years. I know the rule is supposed to be that you can only pay dividends out of earnings, but if all of a sudden one quarter you took a charge on something that was... like a one-time event or something, you could still pay the dividend that quarter. There was some sort of a carve-out. I don't remember what it was.
I don't think that.
Well, all these roadblocks, people are going to invent ways around them. So.
Right. The thing, though, Chief, in this instance, was that what they were doing was taking the negative amortization from the option arm loans. That is an asset.
Yep.
Okay. It's legitimately under accounting rules. Yep, that's an asset. But they were paying the dividend essentially off of these phantom earnings that were not cash. Now the problem with that, of course, is that I cash dividend checks. Okay, they got to be money. And so this was clearly something that with any kind of persistence was going to bankrupt the firm. And functionally render them insolvent, regardless of what they had on their books as an asset. So this was something that was detected that I caught when I started looking as to, okay, why did this blow up happen? And I find this and it's a pattern. It's not just in one bank, it's in a bunch. And then when IndyMac blew up, we found out when they actually went in and analyzed it and the FDIC came in and took them over, that the same guy that they were backdating deposits to meet coverage ratios, and the same guy who was the chief examiner at that bank had done the exact same thing during the SNL crisis.
I remember that.
And he not
did,
only...
Didn't IndyMac start when Senator Schumer had that press conference on like Thursday afternoon, and then discount loans... exploded like, I don't know, 400 or 500%.
Well, I, you know, but
months
but,
before the 2008,
sure, but
collapse.
But point being, Hal,
it almost felt like it was engineered.
Well, like, perhaps it was, but
the announcement was intended to expose it and cause a bank run.
Always remember when you talk about 2007, you can bitch all you want about this person shouldn't have got a loan or should have, and we do, okay. But the fact is, there were $35 of leverage on every dollar of mortgage.
Right. Yeah.
So it was the piling on top. It was the people who
But, Chief, you're right. But that's where I'm going with this, okay, today. All right? You take a look at what NVIDIA is doing right now. They just announced that they are backing Anthropic's data center expansions.
Yeah, $250 billion
worth.
Okay? That's what I want to ask you guys about in the back of my head.
$250 billion worth. All right.
That's a number.
This, by the way, is on the back of about 500 that's already out there from them alone.
This all cash or are they borrowing this?
Well, good question. All right. The problem with all of this is that this is exactly what Lucent did in the late 1990s. It is precisely the same thing.
And well, the reason why it keeps happening is because of all the moral hazards that these safeguards and government subsidies and
well, but it's also but
socializing of risk. That's why it happens.
Now wait a minute, Hal. There is a much more fundamental. You're right, but there's a much more fundamental reason for why it keeps happening.
Market's discipline better than government. I'll tell you that.
Except for the last 30 years, this you've been able to get away with this because every time you have to roll something, it's come at a lower rate. And so I illustrated this when I wrote Leverage. I said, you know, here's the basic concept.
As they used to say, money for nothing and the chicks for free.
Well, pretty much. Yeah. So you borrow $1 million.
I think Sting sang that first part of that song.
Really?
Well, let's say that you borrow $1 million at 10% interest because you're coming off the 1980s, right? All right. And so it's 10% interest. So you have to come up with $100,000 in cash every year to service that loan. That loan is for, say, 3 years. At the end of the 3 years, you have to fork up $1 million. You have to fork the principal back up. Okay, except you don't, because now the rate is 5%. So you can roll it over, and now you'll only have to come up with $50,000 in cash flow to service it. But here's where it gets dangerous. I look at that, and I say, I am currently generating the 100. I can make that coupon payment at 100. That means I can take out another million.
Yep.
I don't have 1 million out. I can have 2 million out because the rate is 5 instead of 10. So that's what I do because I can and by the way, my projections, because I'm growing my business, says that it will be easier for me to generate the hundo for the next couple of years because my business is bigger. Well, that makes sense, right? This is the logic sounds impeccable, and people do this on a continuing basis, and it works right up until the next time that you get all the way down to 1%, you have $10 million out instead of one, all right, and the rate goes to 2.
Yeah, all that is a symptom of the central banking system, which is the reason why interest rates were at around 20 and then fell.
Hell.
In a market free of all that, rates would hover maybe up and down around 9 or 10.
Can I interject here, guys?
I disagree with you on this.
You're on two different levels of the chessboard. As somebody who's...
The cancer is the central bank and the deficit spending of Congress.
You're right about that, Hal, to a certain extent, to a large extent, but what I think...
And you guys, all the moral hazards created by these safety nets.
You guys are kind of jousting about, and the thing that I notice is when I broke into business, the rates were really high. This was my stuff every day.
They were really high because of years of Keynes.
Okay,
the Federal Reserve chairman pumping the system up because they didn't want to raise taxes to pay for the Vietnam War.
Where I'm going with this, Hal, as a professor, maybe you could take note of this. The total mindset is different because we were so schooled in everything that you did had a carrying cost and interest. If somebody were to say to me, Chief, I'm going to give you $1 million a year from now, I'd immediately say, "Well, that's only worth $880." that was your mindset.
Oh yeah, back then. Yeah,
but I'm saying it doesn't change. What Carl's point is, and you're arguing.
I totally understand Carl's point.
What Carl's point is, we're inching back to that era little by little in people's mindset.
Oh, I agree, 100%.
No, Chief, the problem.
I agree with Carl.
You don't agree with anybody. You never agree with me. You can't agree with Carl.
Hal, the problem with your premise, okay, is that you know you point the finger at the central banks, but the
and
issue,
Congress.
Okay, fair enough, okay, but the error is not so much in their existence. The error is the fact that human hubris. Says that which is in a trend is never going to change.
Yeah.
And therefore, I can get away with this on an indefinite forward basis. All right. And
I agree 100% with that.
And the problem is that cyclicality, long-term cyclicality, is a feature of climate. It's a feature of monetary policy. It's a feature of interest rates. It's a feature of virtually everything. You take everybody's, your SUV is why we have all this heat and this and that. Oh, really? So my SUV was responsible for the 1930s Dust Bowl. Well, probably not.
1953.
By the way, 50 years prior to that, there was an even worse one that depopulated 30% of the American West.
All right, guys, I think what's happening.
Well, the SUV didn't exist when the Bering Sea.
Exactly.
When it wasn't a Bering Sea, right?
But my point, Hal, is simply this, that
it was a land bridge.
If you look at data back to the beginning of America, and then you can actually tie this into gilts. So this goes back into England. It's not U.S. centric, all right? This cyclicality is something that you can't do anything about. And when the evidence that we had hit the end of this line showed up, and the first part of it was right around the time of the 2008 crash, and Ben Bernanke actually showed up in Congress and said,
"Yeah, I remember that." Yeah,
he could block the effect of this trade, this turn, but it had a use-by date, and it was about 10 years. And that Congress and everybody else had better get their crap together before that runs out, because by doing this, you're winding the spring further.
Well, you guys,
okay?
Here we are. You're both sort of saying the same thing, but I think the needs to be pointed out.
There are symptoms and there are the cancers.
Okay,
and the cancer is all the intervention, all the safeguards, all that stuff that's socialized onto.
But Hal, what has happened? Some combination of
that creates this environment where you get interest rates at 20% that gradually decline to 3% over the course of 40
years. But you're losing. You're the professor. You're supposed to be teaching people this stuff. go to some place in Chicago in some bar and talk to 10 Bear fans about.
Oh, I know. I live it, Tom. I got first-hand experience with this stuff.
But talk to them about the new stadium. And if you're a guy like me, which aren't many around anymore, and you say, guys, this new thing is going to cost $5 billion, all right? And they'll say, so what? And I say, okay, the Bears make $200 million. Of course, the family's stealing some of the dough. And now, even at a 7% rate, we're talking $350 million bucks. The first check you write every year is for interest. They look at me like I got 15 fat heads. They have no idea what I'm talking about, which is really what Carl's saying. We've lost this collective. It's not like when I started where you discounted everything.
But, Tom, those responses of those guys in that bar are a result of them operating in this system.
That's what I'm saying. And
with
all
these moral hazards of government intervention.
But the change
zero
is...
Zero market discipline. That's the result of our system.
I get it. What I'm saying
is, the government takes care of you. You don't have to be a very good
decision maker. I'm taking government totally out of this as to why it's happening. I'm saying when you grew up when I did, you discount everything immediately because that's what you were taught.
And now, that's the world you grew up in.
Well, now today, interest rates have been 1%. Big guys get to borrow whenever they damn well please, or go to the government and use the state rate at 2.5.
That's
which
the
you
world
got.
I grew up in.
Yeah, but right now, like Carl's saying, is we're going back from one to the other, and people better catch on pretty quick, or else. The last thing you want to do is pony up $5 billion for a stadium and say, "Wait a minute, the team's making half as much as my interest payment."
Right. And oh, by the way, that's what that's called is bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Well, all I'm saying is, I think the mayor of New York is setting a predicate. He's setting the stage, because what I think what he really wants to do is he wants to appropriate people's property in the rental space market. So what he's doing is he's at the same time he's creating a situation where it gives him the opportunity to seize people's property. He's capping rents, and when you cap rents in an inflationary environment, as a landlord, now you don't have the money to reinvest in your properties, and so you create the self-fulfilling prophecy where these rental properties weren't slums, now are slums, and that gives the government the opportunity to say, hey, you're a slum lord, and we're going to take your property from you. That's exactly what I'm talking about here. These people set up these predicates to create devastation. It's not what we observe are the symptoms we're not really discussing the cancers. And I want to look at the cancers, not the symptoms.
The cancer is the inflation rate for 25 years has been higher than the average person's increasing wages.
That's the cancer.
Symptom.
No, it's a symptom. The cancer is the massive deficit spending, the reliance on government to save you, and the Fed printing all this money. Those are the cancers.
Oh, I don't disagree at all. You're never going to get me to disagree on the Fed screwing
but
up.
But we're observing our symptoms.
But it's a cancer. Cancer. It's a cancer for who?
It's a cancer caused by this idea. Government is the government failures. Democide, ecocide.
Yeah, but okay.
That stuff are mounted.
I'm going to ask the same question
the
third time.
Of market failures.
Cancer to who? If you're the owner of that building, if you're the owner of
Merrill... No, it's not a cancer to the people who benefit from the system.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you're owner of Merrill Lago...
And that's what's driving the Marxian rage on the left who elect Mandami and the populism that elected Trump. These people are feeling this Marxian rage, and it's not from the market system. It's from this mercantilist system, this neo-mercantilist system of old Europe that is infesting our country.
Well, little Milty... If you were sat in his class, he would say exactly what you're saying. The problem with the Fed doing this stuff, if it was even, if everybody just walked into the
it's
Fed,
not even.
No, if everybody just walked into the Fed tomorrow and said, "Chief, give me your $1 bills," I give them my Washington and they hand me back a Jefferson, which is what a $2 bill. If everybody did that, everything would just double, be like a stock split.
It would,
but that's not what's happening. Happening
that's
is,
what I write about in that December article on Mises.org.
If you're the
it's
owner...
It's a Pantheon effect on steroids.
That's why it's so simple to look at the Weimar Republic. And well, by the way, where Trump's grandfather was. But not making any illusions there. But the farmers made out like a bandit.
Yeah.
Anybody who had a fixed...
I think the Bushes were involved in that, too.
In the 30s? Well, yeah, what... You know,
I think I remember reading something about the Bushes.
You know, Carl, this is a Wayne and Andrew question. Who was the grandfather's name? Prescott?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I know Bush's cousin was one of the bailed out banks.
Wasn't he one of the biggest thieves there was? That's saying a lot, but...
It is. The history on this is really kind of an interesting, the Bush family... The dynastic kind of approach, if you will, and nowhere was that more evident than when 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
So I mean, that was one of those things from my point of view, anyway.
But, all right. We got only like a minute here. What are we going to do? I'm going to say right now the increase in margin loans in 3 months is eye opening.
It's crazy.
What if it continues? You think it can't at that rate?
No, Chief. As I said, I think my opinion is that we are in the beginning stages of what looks like originally a rolling top. I've seen this kind of pattern before. I've seen the same sort of thing. The SpaceX IPO is an absolutely stunning example of this.
Yep.
And then Tesla. You know, Tesla, the company, the car company, is in the process of imploding from the stamp just because all of the subsidies are disappearing. And on their own, they've never made any money without those. So that's a problem. And then, you know, you've essentially got Elon trying to roll up things into SpaceX. And by the way, his latest pivot is that Tesla is going to be a robot company primarily, not primarily, but cars, not to robot.
Well, we got
to.
I'm happy.
Well, you need robots to explore space.
I'm talking about like in your house. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
but I want.
But you need robots in space.
Did you see the?
Unless you can generate artificial gravity.
Did you see the thing I saw it on? What was it? It was on a YouTube thing about the fake girlfriend. I'll never talk back to you.
Hey, listen, he might sell a bunch of those.
Really? I don't know if I want to go down that road. Hey, Hal, since Carl piled in, if you've got nothing to do Friday, pile in on Carl, because you guys together
are
terrific.
Oh, you want me to pile in on Friday?
Okay. Because you guys are, the fact that you come from two different directions, the amount of knowledge that's popped back and forth.
Really even, agree.
How can you agree with Carl? You never agree with me.
I agree with you sometimes.
When? The only time you agree with me is if the Cubs won last night.
Yeah, I do like the fact that he called me Little Milty.
Are you sure they actually won?
Yeah, absolutely.
It'd be Schrodinger's. We can have Schrodinger's game just like we can have Schrodinger's stock market.
Oh God! You know what? I'm securing the knowledge that my clients will do appreciably better than anybody else if they crash. Still not the same as winning, though.
No, it's not.
So I really don't want to see a crash. I mean, we could.
You need an insider with the Treasury, the Fed, and.
You
need to hire that guy.
Well, Carl's got all the dough. He's gonna pile into the double secret tweets from Trump.
What you want and what you're gonna get are frequently two different things.
Oh, God, they said that in a song once, didn't they? Something. God, SBP.
Go away, Matt. Just go away.
we don't know where you can go. You just can't be here anymore. SBP futures up 5. NASDAQ futures down 214. Back tomorrow.
That's all, folks.